If you're blind or partially sighted, it can be difficult to get information in an accessible format. However, you would think that when it's, say, your doctor or your health clinician, hospitals, etc., information would be sent in your preferred style. Not the case, although that is changing as far as NHS England goes. And we have with us Hugh Huddy from RNIB's campaigns team to tell us a little bit more about the accessible information. Hugh, I suppose it's quite obvious to say that if you have a visual impairment, not getting information in accessible format can prove difficult, but crucial for health information.
Yeah, it is. It's one of these things that many of us who are blind and partially sighted just accept that stuff from the NHS isn't in an accessible format. You know, we'll all know about those bits of paper given to us. Oh, is there someone who can help you read that? It's a busy health setting, you know, GP or a hospital clinic. And many of us are probably used to that way we deal with it, which is, it's not right, but I can see they're busy, so I'll see if I can find someone to read it to me. That's actually what the research that RNIB did in 2009 found, that nearly 97% of people who are blind and partially sighted, while they said they did need and want accessible health information, they'd never actually asked for it. So things are changing. There is now a new law. It reinforces the Equality Act 2010, and it empowers blind and partially sighted people to clear a stronger right of accessible information in the NHS context. And it kicks in on the 1st of August this year, that the new NHS Accessible Information Standard kicks in England, and it gives you a right of access to all your information, whether that's general health leaflets, you know, if you get, say, a high cholesterol leaflet or a leaflet on diabetes or broken ankle or anything that you get shoved on paper, you have a right to that in your accessible format. And also appointment letters, you know, all those letters that arrive just reminding us we have an appointment at the ophthalmic clinic in a month's time or something like that. Everything is now part and parcel of that new accessibility standard.
So would I then, as a patient, just let my GP know, and that could be sort of cascaded to other clinicians who I would see?
That is exactly how it works. Rome wasn't built in a day. There's a lot of NHS out there across the whole of the United Kingdom. 1.3 million people work in the NHS. It has thousands and thousands of different types of computer systems and thousands of different hospital clinics. And, you know, when you actually look at the scale of implementing an accessibility flag on all computer systems in the NHS, empowering staff and making them aware that they need to ask you and type it into the computer, and then for all the data people in the background to be linking computer systems up so that data's shared, it's a big job. But the NHS is underway with this project. So our advice is to make sure that you formally notify your GP. And the reason why that's important is because even though you might not go to your GP very often, the GP holds your patient record. That's where this requirement needs to be. So, for example, when you get referred from your GP to a specialist hospital clinic, that information about your accessibility and communication needs will be shared under this new standard. That's what the standard says. You get shared round when you get passed from one bit of the NHS to the next.
It's a great step forward, Hugh. We are going to come back to you again and just hear how RNIB can help people do that with more information and so on. But I want to hear from Stacey Rowe. Stacey is registered blind herself. We've talked about getting appointments, say, for your ophthalmologist or doctor's appointments or so on, but you really needed information at a critical point and it wasn't accessible.
That's right, I definitely did. So back in March, I was admitted to hospital with what I thought was a minor chest infection, and it turned out to be the end stage of kidney failure, which was a complete shock to everybody. And that required me to have dialysis, and I'm on the, you know, transplant waiting list, etc. And obviously, you know, that's a big thing, and there was a lot of information to take in terms of, you know, the first thing I was presented with was, you know, your options for dialysis treatment. which was presented to me like a menu in a restaurant in the form of a booklet, which I couldn't read. And I experienced the same when I was having the conversation around, you know, this is what you need to know for the transplant and, you know, the drugs you would take afterwards, etc. And that again was presented to me in the form of a booklet. I have a folder near me that's about an inch and a half thick of everything I need to know. And again, it's all in paper format.
Hugely important information, you know, life-saving information you're getting there, and things you'll probably have to keep track of for the rest of your life. So what was the reaction in when you asked for this in an accessible format?
It was very interesting, actually. I made it quite clear that when I said accessible format, what I meant for me was an electronic copy. And I was told that there was no electronic copies. And I tried to sort of articulate the point that the leaflets and booklets I've been handed were not handwritten. They had been typed, so they did obviously exist somewhere in ether in an electronic form. I was very much greeted with a very hierarchical response, which certainly confused me. It was very much, well, I am a doctor, I don't deal with that. I'm a surgeon, I don't deal with that. I'm a nurse, I don't deal with that. There was a lot of sort of passing the buck, I would say, in terms of that, or perhaps a bit of confusion around, well, whose responsibility is it to get this information in a format that the patient can read?
Now, Hugh obviously mentioned that some of the responses were, well, can someone read it for you? And I'm assuming that they said that to yourself. But, you know, I get, once again, we're talking about very personal information, some of this, not just leaflets you can pick up in a doctor's surgery. Some of this would be, you know, very personal to the condition you have.
It's very personal, yes. And also it's very, very detailed. So it's not the kind of thing you can read once, you know, and put it down again. It's something you need to really take in, you know, through meticulous study almost. Because I've been asked many times, you know, could you not look it up online then if you can access computers with JAWS, etc., different screen readers? And I would say, yes, you can, of course. But the problem with that is twofold. One, I really needed guided information. The booklets that they give you are specific to what you need. And the second thing is when, and I'm sure, you know, many of the listeners will completely understand this, when you're confronted with something medical, it's a scary time, regardless of what it is. You know, some people like me are absolutely terrified of injections. So anything can be quite daunting. So then to have to take on the battle of accessibility on top of that and go online, do your own research and potentially stumble across things that scare you even more, which has happened to me a lot. It's a massive undertaking on top of what you're already going through.
Hugh, here is the perfect example of why we need information in an accessible format.
Yeah, it's a really stark case, this one with Stacey. It's not the first time we've heard of this. I mean, we've been campaigning on accessible health information since 2009. At that time, there was no standard. You had the Equality Act, but you as a patient was expected to go and find a lawyer and take action. Totally unacceptable. So I think what Stacey's case highlights is we all have a responsibility when it comes to accessible information. It's true that at the moment the NHS isn't used to giving blind and partially sighted people, I mean all of us who are blind and partially sighted know that when you ask for accessible format, it can be quite confusing to people. What, do you want it by email? Do you want it as a PDF? No, not a PDF. I want it as a Word document, or I want it in Braille, or I want it in large print, and then there's the font size issue, and then there's the layout issue, or I want it on audio CD, and then is it DAISY, structured audio, or is it just audio CD, is it MP3? There's a lot of learning that has to be done in the NHS to be able to provide a menu of format. And remember, the way the NHS accrues all this information, for example, in Stacey's case, the renal information coming through the NHS will come from multiple sources, and these clinics will either buy the information in as leaflets in order to give patients or treatment guides, or they will get it produced in-house. But there's information producers left, right and centre who are producing this stuff, and they're all just used to just banging it out on paper. As far as they can see, that's the end of their responsibility. And what this new standard is changing is it requires that all NHS staff know how to act, and it's set out in the standard in close detail so that information managers and clinical managers in these hospitals and in GPs are given a series of steps that they need to take to make sure their staff know what to do and that there are systems in place for providing accessible formats of information. The most important thing for all of us to realise is our GP refers us to these services. Your GP is the one paying for these services. And if you're not getting accessible information, you're not getting part of the newly contracted service, because this new accessible information standard is part of the NHS standard contract. So your GP is the person to complain to say, I don't know if you realise this is happening to me. I'm one of your patients and you've referred me to this service. And I've told you what my accessible format is, but I'm not getting it from this service. So your GP has a responsibility to make sure that you are receiving the contracted service that they are paying for. The second thing is, all hospitals have a patient advice and a liaison service. They're called PALs. Because they're an advocacy as well as a liaison service, they will liaise with you to sort problems out inside the hospital.
Some great advice there, Hugh. If anyone though, would like any further information, Hugh, perhaps has other questions or wants to know a bit more about this, how can they get in touch with Campaigns?
RNIB Campaigns is available all over the place. On the phone, 020 7391. 2123. You can find us online, www.rnib.org.uk/campaigns. We also have a dedicated page for the Accessible Information Standard and the Need It to Read It campaign, and that's at www.rnib.org.uk/need-it-to-read-it, and that's all one word.
Hugh Huddy and Stacey Rowe, thank you both for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.